You're now listening to On The Real Podcast with Will and the official Adrian. Real life, real issues, real talk. Here we go. On The Real. What's going on, everybody? It is the official Adrian and Ill Will. You're listening to On The Real Podcast, where we talk real life, real issues, real talk. This is episode 4. We are back in the building.
Back in the building.
It's been a long week. I always feel like anytime we take some time off, either whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, something happens.
I feel like that week in between allows everything to come together and things and life to happen.
Yeah, you know? That's right. Listen, we talk real life, real issues, real talk. That means men's mental health, right? We want you to open up. We're going to talk about relationships, finances, you name it, parenting, co-parenting, friendships, brotherhood, everything. And what's great is that tonight we have a special guest, a good friend of mine, old colleague. I mean, I could probably name everything with this dude. Cannot wait to introduce him. But before we do, this is probably a little off the platform a little bit. I'm going to turn it over to you because you say you want to drop something. So go ahead and tell me.
Have you ever been in a situation where...
Yes. Don't even finish the question. No, go ahead.
Where you set boundaries and you move the goalposts on yourself and it ends up backfiring on you?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Right? You set standards and boundaries in your relationship or what you need for the relationship to proceed or get somewhere. And you spend time with the person and you begin to move that goalpost.
So talk to me. Why did you move it?
Because feelings start to happen, right? Feelings start to occur. The challenge comes into where the person doesn't even believe you can have feelings for them. Listen, I'm so toxic. I'm sorry. I have to put it like this. My last three relationships have been with either women that were just going through divorce or figuring out that they wanted a divorce or had been separated for a period of time and haven't been divorced yet. And two of them with severe drinkers. So it's like you move the volume. I like that.
I appreciate had to adjust that. You. Yeah, so
I had to. So you know, you begin to develop feelings, and it is 100% true. The red flags you ignore in the beginning,
we talked about this,
are what destroy you in the end. But
are you purposely ignoring the red flags? Are you thinking that every situation you walk into that you could fix it? Is that what's happening?
My issue is I take people at their word, and when they begin to tell me that they can change things or they're willing to change things to make the relationship happen,
right?
I take that at your word. Listen, I just need this from you. I need some time from you. I need this from you. I need this from you. And you start giving those things because you want to see the best out of that person. Because you know they're capable of it. I believe that we're all capable of greater things, right? And you start to, all right, so you need this from me so you can be great? I'm going to give it to you. Nothing changes. Oh, I need this now. So you give them that. Nothing changes.
But you know that's not about you, it's about them, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it gets to a point where you have to remove yourself for your own mental peace. You have to remove yourself from that situation, regardless of how much you care and love that person. Because if not, it starts to deteriorate your own mental health.
So have we not learned from our conversations in the past that it's probably time to take a break in between?
And that's the thing. I was on a 3-year hiatus before entering my last relationship. And, you know, I wanted to see the best in that person. And you start to, you know, give the person the benefit of the doubt. But when you begin, I firmly believe that when you see those things and there's no change, and then you start getting excuses on why they're not doing it yet, there's not a willingness to change. There's something going on within them that they have to deal with. Like, you know,
right.
So I if I see those flags, I start to, hey, listen, either we do the therapy together or you need to go by yourself, but we need therapy.
Right.
Therapy is needed. And I've been told in a separate occasion that the fear was that if they went to therapy, they would figure out that we weren't meant to be together.
Oh, say that again.
That if they went to therapy, they would figure out that we weren't meant to be together. And I'm okay with that.
Right.
You have to care about the person enough that if they figure out you're not the person for them, go. But at least you're healthy when you're leaving.
So the issue is, because you said fear. That's what I really meant for you to stop. I didn't indicate that. There's fear regardless, right? Because you have to face whatever it is that is your biggest obstacles in life. So even beyond whether or not they know they need to be in a relationship with you or not, the issue is, oh my God, I need to address
my issues.
My issues, right?
It's that long good look in the mirror.
That's why there is that stigma with therapy where most people say either, oh, you know, it doesn't work, or it's not worth it, or I don't want to go talk to someone about my problems because I can figure it out on my own.
Yeah.
Or I'm not the problem, which is the last person on the list you don't even want to talk to.
Yeah, and usually they believe that they're not the problem.
Right.
And that's when you know it's time to walk away. I mean, the hardest thing to ever do in any situation is be in love with the person and have to walk away from the relationship because you notice that it's just not healthy.
So talk to me, though. You said you moved the goalposts. Explain to me what that means.
So you set boundaries, right? You said, I need this, this, and this from you. And because you start caring for the person, it's like, all right, I'm willing to wait for this a little longer. Maybe they do need a little time. But in giving them time, you need to see the work happen, right? We need to see some type of progression, some type of steps toward the healing and the acknowledgement that there is an issue. When you don't see those steps, you need to stop moving the post. So we move the post in a sense, all right, you know what? You can't really put a time limit on this healing, but they're taking steps. So you keep moving the time, or you start moving the goalpost little by little, little by little. But if there's no work being done, why are we moving the post? Why give the person the benefit of the doubt? The change, to me, the change has to begin almost instantaneously. You have to make the decision to change and begin the process, not dwell in your loss and trauma and not begin to find a way to heal.
But you can't, here's the thing though, you're trying to put in a fix without changing any of the process, right? So basically doing the exact same thing over and over, right? So if a person has said, all right, I want to change my diet, here's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to eat X, Y, and Z. But without any true structure, without any true discipline, what's going to happen?
You're going to fail.
You're going to fail. So quickly identify, you can't do the fix with each other when you both got work to do. She needs to go to therapy on her own. You need to continue your therapy on your own. And then maybe bridge the gap and go together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's the only way.
But so I think that we need to stop moving the goalpost. I think we need to, when you set your boundary and you set your standard, don't feel the need to move that standard or adjust your standard. If that's your standard, keep to it.
Right. Okay.
It will only destroy your mental health in the end.
All right. That's what you need to get out.
That's what I need to get
out. That's what you were feeling.
Yes. I feel better.
I feel like a lesson was finally learned, that we were finally there with it. So, you know, listen, I think we could do this every single time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Kind of our little roll call that we need to do. But I want to go ahead and intro our guests. Like I said, this dude, absolutely amazing. Man, I've probably known him for probably about 10 years now. I didn't even realize it. One of the things that I can say is probably one of the most active human beings that I know that's in the community. I always like to pride myself on the work I do, but man, this guy's doing all of it. Jack of all trades. He's an author. He's an artist. He's a humanitarian. He's a brother. He's a colleague of mine. I mean, he is everything. He's worked with Route 7 Orlando, my brother's keeper. Want to intro to the show, Kwanza Cadigan. Kwanza, what's going on, brother?
Yo, peace and love, fellas. Peace and love.
Thank awesome, you awesome. Yips.
Yeah. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. We appreciate you.
Yeah,
I love to tell people this. When you're a small, young, independent business or entrepreneur, the best thing you can always do is give your platform to someone else and just kind of elevate them. And a salute to you, brothers, for doing that for me. I mean, with all the accolades, any platform is a platform to kind of promote what I'm trying to do and the goodness I'm trying to create, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. First guest, man.
Hey, listen.
Couldn't have been a better person.
What an honor. And now you're going to set the standard for everybody else. You feel me?
We're talking about setting bars. Anybody else comes in, now it's like, oh, man, I got to listen to that one first and see how that went. and trust me, I've talked to a couple people, and they're like, hold on, can we listen to somebody else first? Because I got some nerves before I even come in there. So I was like, yeah, we could do that. You just got to come on at some point. So anyway, thank you for being here, man. So, there's a bunch of questions we want to get to, but just how's life, man? How's everything going?
life is good. No complaints. Or I can always complain.
Yeah, that's true.
Nobody cares.
Yeah. And to be honest, I think just constantly always trying to do better than I did yesterday is the movement that kind of fuels me for tomorrow. And so every day I'm like, all right, you know, yesterday I only knew how to do, you know, a front flip, but now I want to know how to do two somersaults and a front flip tomorrow. Like, it's just always trying to do better. And when people ask me how my day is, I'm just trying to be better. I'm trying to do better.
Nice.
Trying to be a better role model, example to the young people out here, whether that's through art, music, you name it. I mean, I just want a piece of it. Culture. I kind of put that as my umbrella, is culture. And that's anything to anyone.
Right.
Race, religion. Yeah.
How long you been in Orlando?
I've been in Orlando over 30 years.
Oh, you and I both then, yeah.
Yeah, but
where are you originally from?
Brooklyn, New York is home.
Brooklyn in the house.
East Flatbush.
Okay.
Yeah, big up. And then my parents are West Indian, so, you know, first generation American, and the pressures that come along with that. But I feel like a lot of that New York influence is in what I do. I think if you know, look at my social media, or you listen to the music that I like, or sometimes even the clothes I wear, it's very much a New York hip hop influence. And then having that West Indian in me also adds a little bit of, you know, je ne sais quoi to the gumbo.
Nice. So, nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's me. I mean, I could go on and on about me, but.
Well, I mean, that's why we have you here.
Yeah, that's why we got you. That's why you're here, brother.
The Brooklyn, oh, that's what I'm talking about, man.
Three Brooklynites in the building.
So hold on. I got to ask the loaded question, because, you know, did you ever watch any baseball growing up?
I wasn't a huge baseball guy, but I know where you're going, and I'm a Mets guy.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
It was Mets, Jets for me. That's my
best guest ever right there. That's it. We're done. Show's over.
Yeah, just like, see, but, you know, it shows y'all that y'all loyal and that y'all enjoy pain and misery.
If we're not talking about mental health, we're not talking about the Mets.
Or the Jets.
Or the Jets, because I'm a Jets fan too, so I like being disappointed.
You guys enjoy disappointment.
I'm a Knicks fan too, so love being disappointed again right there. So.
I feel as New York as we kind of always go through that, whether it's the Giants. I mean, the Yankees, I'll give you that. They're constantly amazing, but
we've been trashed the last four seasons. I say it all the time. We need pitching, but this isn't a sports podcast.
But hey, we said mental health,
it's
right?
All, so we got culture as well. I mean, all of that is under culture as well. When we talk about culture, I think sports, fashion, music. So I love that we could talk about that. I mean, even though we're from Brooklyn, I'm sure we're all from three different walks of life, but
oh, definitely. Absolutely.
We're going to find something to connect with, whether it comes to culture. So I'm really excited about this talk today.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to lead with Route 7 Orlando, just because, one, what an amazing program, what it does for young men, especially in the BIPOC community. I would love for you just to talk a little bit about that. And I'm going off my structure a little bit, because I had questions. Will has questions too. Yeah. But man, if we don't give the time due for Route 7 Orlando, then I don't know what's better than doing that tonight. So talk, you know, share with the airwaves, man.
Yeah, listen, Route 7 Orlando, and I'll start by telling my own little personal story about Route 7 Orlando before I jump into it.
Sure.
I stumbled across the organization through social media, and when I saw what they were doing before I even arrived, which is mostly community service, holding each other accountable, a group of men doing that, I knew that it was something I wanted to be a part of. Come to find out, they were also kind of watching my growth as well, and what I was doing in the community. And we were almost simultaneously like viewing each other. And it was just a simple DM that kind of connected the dots. And over the last, you know, 6 years, I've been a proud board member and helping that organization grow. And for those of you who don't know what Route 7 Orlando is, I'll take a step back and tell you, an organization that I believe was started in 2013 by my good brother Gene Martin and a few other brothers. And the idea was there were six main roads or six main highways kind of connecting Central Florida. And this group of young men wanted to be that seventh route. And so from that ideology, Route 7 was born. And it's pretty much based on three principles. It's a men-only structured group, but their accountability, which we have accountabilities, meetings kind of bi-monthly. We have collaboration. So we get together with other organizations, and we host financial literacy. We have a mental health series that we also run. And then we also have community service, which is kind of where I've kind of stepped in and played a part by adding a new mentorship program called Well Said, which we do throughout Central Florida, not just in one location. We have multiple locations right now. So Route 7 Orlando, what can I say? It's just an amazing platform for men like us who, I don't know about you guys, but I struggle with just being open and communicating with other men. I don't find that to be something that's very easy. I'm actually an introvert by nature, but to have a group of guys that I can say, yo, what you think about this? Or I might need a hand with that. It goes a long way in making my life a little bit easier and not having to carry the load all the time with projects and ideas and concepts. I have a group of guys that I can lean on, and they're going to kind of push me and help me reach my goals and anything that I have kind of set in my vision.
That's great, man.
How has that worked for you in holding you accountable? Because I had gone to one of the meetings, and every question I was asked by the gentleman there was, what is your goal?
Yeah.
And what are the steps you're taking to achieve it?
I love that.
And I found that very to be very interesting questions, because then I had to sit back and go, wow, yeah. I got some goals, but am I taking the steps to get there? We speak about, you know, men having difficulty opening up, mm-hmm. right? How were you pushed into that? Was it like pulling teeth, or did you begin naturally as you saw others doing it begin to open up?
That's it exactly right there. I think once you get comfortable with the skin you're in, the people that you're around, if you feel like they're your brothers, I think that usually happens for a lot of our members around the second or third meeting. Thank you for coming to one of the meetings, by the way. I think that's the first step in just seeing what we're all about. We always encourage people, before you join, come to one or two meetings and meet the guys, see if it's something that fits for you, see if it works. But to answer your question, because I struggle with being open and just being vulnerable as a man, it took me a little while. And after the second and third meeting, when I saw the guys kind of being like, hey, they text me, right? It'd be, you know, how you doing, man? I know you set this goal of, you know, achieving this. Did you achieve it? If not, how can I help you? Something as simple as that really goes a long way in terms of pushing me, because be like, man, maybe I have dropped the ball. I spent one too many nights watching reruns instead of,
I get it.
You know, chasing this dream that I just set out in front of me. And so it's really amazing that we set those bars and then we reach out to each other like, yo, I know you said you wanted to do that, man. Did you do it? And if you didn't, I'm going to be right next to you and hold your hand to get to it. So
that's great, man. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have some more questions to ask Akwanza. Hopefully we get everything out tonight, man. I'm loving this one, so we'll be right back. All right, we're back. Listen, I told you I was going to work on this listen thing, and we're the listen back. Thing is going to stay with me. It's my word. You're listening to On the Real Podcast with the official Adrian and Ill Will. We got our guest here, Akwanza Cadogan, just talking a little bit about Route 7 Orlando. I want to bring this back just a little bit more in terms of we talked about this a little bit in the past about having the mental health series
yep.
of Route 7 Orlando. Yep. And for those of you who don't know what Route 7 Orlando is all about, right? We talk about BIPOC, right? Black, Indigenous people of color. And today's podcast or show, I should say, is about the Black experience when it comes to mental health, right? And, you know, I would love for you to kind of, because there's a reason why you do what you do in Route 7 Orlando, right? And it goes without being said, we got to help the youth, especially young men, mm-hmm. be able to open up, speak up. If you want to share, you know, talk to us a little bit about your mental health experience. What has that been like? And has, you know, programs like Route 7 Orlando helped out, or being an artist, right? Or being an author, have any of those things kind of helped your mental health?
Also being an introvert and having to step out of your shell.
Yeah.
And having to put yourself on front stage and be able to communicate with large groups of people, and even smaller, even a one-on-one situation, because it's difficult for introverts to even express themselves and hold those conversations.
Yeah. I'll start with responding to your question, because that was a really good question. And I get asked that a lot, honestly, because I love to lead with that I was an introvert, and I still am in a lot of senses. But you'll start to notice as you get older, for anybody listening who's a little bit younger, that you kind of get left behind if you don't speak up.
Squeaky wheel gets the oil.
I spent a lot of my childhood being quiet, and that didn't mean I wasn't absorbing, I wasn't listening and taking in everything, which is what I always try to do, even in my adult age. But not speaking up at that time made people feel like I didn't have much to say. I was the quiet kid, when in actuality, I had a lot to say. I just didn't know how to say it, and I didn't feel comfortable saying it to just anyone. I wanted it to just be people that I was comfortable with. And so I think at some point I was like, I want to speak up. And actually, I can tell you the exact moment. It was when we lost Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. My son had just turned 3 years old. I was a new father. I was ambitious and hungry, but I was one of those guys. I wanted to sit at home, listen to a jazz record, drink my tea. I didn't want anyone to bother me. I didn't want nothing to do with anything. And then I saw that, and I was introduced to Stand Your Ground and all of these different rules that were out, and just how innocent he was, and losing him, that I felt, that was the moment where I felt, I don't want to say rage, but something inside me, the fire lit.
Right.
It sparked at that point. And then from then on, it was, man, I now know what I may need to do in life. And I think I know how I need to go about it. And I've started this path of finding that journey and going on that journey of how do I find who I am and find my voice. And that was through programs like, what's the one that we were talking about it earlier?
Our Brother's Keeper?
No.
Not Ralph 7 either. just we're going to throw a bunch of stuff out there.
It's all right, because what's important I found my journey and on how to find my voice. And in a sense,
we're talking about Toastmasters?
Toastmasters.
There you go.
And in a sense, at least to answering your second question as to why now I turn that to young people, is because once I found my voice and I found how to speak out, it was like, man, now I got to get these young people who are also fearful like I was at one point, and get them at a very young age and get them to be able to say whatever they want to say, however they want to say it, and just prepare them now for it. Because these young people are dealing with a lot more than we were in our time. I'm going to be honest with you guys. We're talking, you know, gun violence. We're talking, they're being told what to be taught in school. And
right.
Our young people are just faced with so many things nowadays. And so to equip them with public speaking and just being able to speak their mind and speak their voice. I've personally had a front row seat at seeing these kids change and become impactful in life. Even if that's not what they have in life, communication leads to so many other things.
At what age was that Trayvon situation for you? How old were you?
I was in my mid-30s.
Mid-30s. Okay. So I think we're the same age, so yeah, I think around mid-30s.
Yeah, right. I was very late to finding myself.
That's what I was leaning towards.
Yeah, and to be honest, in actuality, there is no real age for finding yourself. I think as long as you're always on that quest to find yourself, right? And so, it wasn't until my late 30s, mid-30s, that I discovered, hey, man, I have a voice. And I've actually spent the last, 10 years or so trying to, make a legacy, create a legacy, build a legacy, and change our communities,
You talk about working in a community. Is there anything, especially with young black men, that you've noticed about mental health and how it's viewed or discussed? And I feel like this is a question I already know the answer to, but I'd rather hear it from your perspective. Because again, we're talking about, I know what it's like to be Latino,
yeah,
but that doesn't necessarily mean just because, we've got more melanin in our skin that we understand your experience.
Sure.
Or what they're experiencing.
Sure. And I will say in 2023, the world has done a good job of identifying mental health as an issue. I can tell you, being at that grassroots level, a lot of young people now have counselors and mental health counselors in the schools with them that they can go to. So that's something that I've noticed has really actually changed over the last 5 to 10 years, and actually being with the kids. So they have an outlet. They have someone that they as a neutral party, not a teacher, not a counselor, but they're put in the schools to help them de-escalate issues before they get out into the streets and become violent. What I will say from a, and I can't speak for all black people, guys, because
we're talking about your experience.
But what,
right?
I can, yeah, tell you is,
we will speak for all Latino men. I'm just saying right now. No, I'm just kidding.
our young Black people, especially in the inner cities, are waking up every day to traumatic events. We're talking about gun violence. I know the news doesn't really show it very well, but I can honestly tell you that gun violence is a real issue, and it's happening. The fights, the homelessness, a lot of these things are really happening. And so our young people are having to deal with a lot. And I'm not saying generations before didn't have it, but I think now with social media and all of these other tools,
it's
around,
more exposed.
Yeah, like more. The kids are
more
vulnerable.
I mean, it's in your face more often.
Yeah. The kids are vulnerable. Yeah. And they're scared to speak up and speak out because they don't want other people to judge them. And from a mental health perspective, that's really difficult because as Black men, we are already starting with a chip on our shoulder of being disenfranchised and, you know, too much policing in our neighborhoods and so forth and so on. So we're already kind of starting, our young Black men are already starting far behind in third place before, and not at the actual starting line with everyone else, which is what we're trying to close that gap. I think programs like Well Said, I think organizations like Route 7 Orlando, and a lot of other organizations. I know Pernell Bush, who has a very big mental health movement happening in Central Florida for people of color. There are things that people are doing to close the gap with mental health for both young and older people of color.
Definitely. You know, one of the things, you said Pernell, have I met him?
It's possible. I mean, once you've met Pernell, you don't forget him.
I feel like I have. And that name is like sticking out to me, too.
I believe his movement is called No Limit Counseling.
No Limit Counseling. We've got to look at that.
It is trying to solve a lot of the problems we're having with Black men, just Black people in general wanting to go to counseling. I mean, I know, like I said, in 2023, things are changing. There are definitely a lot more people of color going and seeking mental health. But for those who still are one foot in, one foot out, programs like that are kind of spearheading them to get out and speak to someone.
And that was part of the reason we started this, right? Because we wanted to show Hispanic men, you know, opening up and being vulnerable and expressing how they're feeling. My question to you, have you always been an introvert, or is it like...
Hold on, I want to interject because I've known this man for like 10, 11 years. And the way I met him actually was through, we played basketball with each other. I just want to say we also made it all the way to the end. I want to say we won that year too.
We may have won that year.
Yeah.
He's always got to show his basketball.
I'm just saying. I mean, we're just going to talk about it.
We were much younger.
He's much younger.
He's 5'9".
Hey, give me the nine, okay? I am that nine. All right, I'll take it. 5'10" on a good day. Just saying. Anyway, no. That's crazy. You know, and I've learned a lot within the last couple of years, the difference between introvert, extrovert, and ambivert, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at you, and I'm like, there is no way in the world you're an introvert.
Yeah, man. It's funny you say that because you almost, and it's this thing we have as just people of color when I don't want to get left behind. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm always constantly learning from people, reading books to get knowledge. And if I see someone that's doing something that's excelling, I'm going to take a look at what they're doing and be like, man, I want to be that. And it always came back to my own self fear of speaking out. That was always the problem, that why wasn't becoming as successful as I had anticipated earlier. And so the minute I found out that that was the issue and I was able to work on it and build a craft and work on the craft and become proficient in it, honestly, is when I saw a traumatic change in my trajectory, in just my career and what I'm trying to do and the people I meet, the people that come into my space and share energy with. It's just been beautiful because I've been able to speak up.
You know, real quick before we go to break, you said something career, because you and I worked at the same organization for a long time.
Yep.
Do you feel like that the personality that, at least for me, existed outside of work was accepted inside those walls in that building?
I always kept the two separate.
I that's a loaded question. I know that. And the reason why I say that is there's people in my life that know you, right? And they always used to say, man, Akwanza, well-spoken, all-around great guy. Why isn't he at this level? Yeah, why isn't he at this level? And I don't think it's for lack of you trying.
Sure.
You know, I think there is some part, there's some truth to be said about kind of muting our personalities, right? To be safe for others, to make them feel safe about us. So I always wondered if you felt like you had to mute yourself.
And is that a programming thing?
Man, hold on, we're gonna take a quick break because that's gonna go somewhere. You're listening to On the Real Podcast. We'll be right back after this. Yeah. What's going on, everybody? You're listening to On the Real Podcast with the official Adrian Ill Will. We are back with Aquanza. Go ahead. What do you want to say? Yeah. I already see you. Yeah.
Forget it.
No,
say
it.
No, forget it. Forget it.
Say it.
Now that you always ask me, do I want to bring us back? And I'm like, nah.
Nah. You did it one time.
I've done it with four episodes and I've done it once.
You've done it one time. That's it. That's you right there. So bring it down, please. So before we took the break, we talked a little bit about being at work, right? And feeling like whether or not you had to mute yourself. And Will asked about, you know, is that part of conditioning programming? So I wanted to give you the opportunity to answer that question. We talked a little bit in between break, but please, you know, tell me that what that was like, because I didn't know you were an introvert.
Yeah, I think to take it full circle, the introvert in me just wanted to be the guy that went to work every day and wasn't really noticed. I just stayed under the radar and got the work done and got it done well and was known well for that. But then what I noticed is once I found my voice and I was like, listen, this is who I am. I'm black and I'm proud. I want the world to know. I started to see this shift at work where it was like, okay, people are following me now on social media. They know that I have a following, and now I can kind of merge the two together instead of having to be two people. And I can tell you now, work is much more comfortable when I can be my authentic, genuine self. But for a time, there was this alter ego, double life that had to be led, just for safety, just for being a black man in corporate America. I think I just wanted to fit in.
And there's also that thing. Sorry, I gotta say it, because we worked for the same organization. It was also about protecting your brand.
100%.
Right. 100%. So even though the person you are outside of work, at you know the what you do in the community and who you are as a father, as a brother. Great things, but again, that protecting that brand.
That corporate brand is almost more important than your real brand in some ways, because when you're starting to look for more money and you want a promotion, it had to be squeaky clean and you had to know all the right people and kiss the right babies and shake the right hands. And so it's exhausting. It was exhausting. And again, I'm super thankful that at some point in my life, things kind of merged together and I could be my true authentic self.
Now, talk to me about the effects that had on you, like being able to, having to shelter yourself or, you know, not be your true authentic self in that corporate world. Because we spend 40 hours a week, sometimes 50 hours a week at work, right? So you're basically not pretending to be someone else, but not truly being you. How did that affect you?
So it's funny you ask that, because there was a core group of people who knew me, right? You know, my man A, my immediate coworkers that would come to my events and come support, they knew me and they were my messengers in a sense of going out and being like, hey, he's doing great work at work. Like they would tell people and then people would go click my YouTube and be like, oh, wow, like that's amazing. So in a sense, it started bad, but the end result was amazing, because I think I learned that in opening up, people were going to be my advocate for me. I didn't have to do all the work in terms of, this is me, this is who I am. Like other people were like, man, that's who he is. That's who he can be. Like, and I think that was what's important for corporate America, at least, was because I felt I had to be one way. And then when I realized I can be another way and still be accepted, I mean, and you know, I used to go in my Jordans with the slacks and I got comfortable. I got the button downs, I still made it look corporate, but I was authentically me at times. So I think that was really important.
That's now, the best part, man. Go ahead.
Now, was there a sense of relief when you were able to transform into that? Well, it's not really a transformation, because it's who you are. But did you feel a sense of relief, and did you notice a skyrocket in your success?
Life is this journey, man. Life is a journey. I think everything is happening as it should, when it should for me. I wouldn't have been prepared for my journey if it happened a little bit earlier in my life. It took me going through Toastmasters. It took me working with young people, It took me being out in the community to say, all right, I have to start growing now myself, because I'm getting more things in my life, that I'm exposed to more new things that I want to share with other people. And so I think I just love that life is this journey, man. I think for anybody listening right now, like, I started in that corporate world and now have an opportunity to work with young people. I get to do art, which I'm not the greatest artist, but I work in art. I work in performance. He's being
humble.
Art.
He's being humble, just to be very clear. He's very talented.
I mean, thank you, bro. But I say that to say
that's a perfect, that's the perfect lead in to what I was going to ask next anyway. So I'm glad, but don't you dare take away any of the talent that you have.
Because
you are
him,
a great artist.
Show off a little bit. Come on. Talk about it.
And again, as an introvert, those are all things that I held close to myself. Right. Like, listen, I'm scared to show people my art. I don't want them to hear me speak, because what are they going to think? They're going to judge me. And I got in that comfort zone where it was like, my art is my art, whether you like it or not. It's my contribution to the diaspora of the world. When I'm gone, I hope people talk about the things that I've done and the legacy that I've left. And so for me, it's all about just doing better. I talked about it earlier when we started. Like, I want to be better than I was yesterday. If that's creating a bigger, better art piece than the one I created the first time. If it's going from 20 to 30 kids that we're improving on. If it's finding two new locations to have young people be better. That's what it's all about, man. And I mean, everything that that surrounds me influences me. Music, art, vinyl toys, sneakers, I mean, you name it, I'm about it. Everything you being in this room with you guys right now is gonna be influence for me to go back and take it back to, man, this is a new experience. I'm on a podcast. Like, that's dope.
I want you to talk about your art, because I think it's quite unique, you know, and for anyone who hasn't seen it, I know you're on Instagram. What's the handle?
At AkwanzaKaduggan.com.
Okay. So, man, I've been saying your last name wrong for all this time.
Bro, not just you, man. I think the whole
world. I thought it was Cadigan.
I just went to a family reunion.
I mean, Cadigan is what it's been my whole... I think everyone else has told me it's Cadigan.
Americanized it.
It's not you, bro. For a long time in my life.
It looks like Cadigan, just being honest. Listen, if anyone wants to destroy my last name, please, they can. It's the hardest one. Go ahead.
I recently went to a family reunion in Jamaica with the fam, and I was with all my boy cousins, and they were all like, Cadogan, Cadogan. And I was like, wait a minute.
Uh-oh.
Is that how we say our last name? Here I am in my 40s, bro. And I'm like, yo, I've been saying my last name wrong my whole life. But in honor of my family and the legacy, I've tried to kind of correct that now and get it corrected. So it's Cadogan is the correct pronunciation.
I'm going to work on that now.
Nah, it's all good. But to the art, I have two different forms of art. One is the collage art that I do. I love to take old Ebony, Jet magazine, Source, Double XL, all those magazines I grew up on. And funny story, that's what I went to college to study to do, was to be a journalist and write in magazines. And then the magazine industry tanked and there was no money in that. But what I do is I take those old magazines, cut them up, and I create my own art out of it. And then I wrap it on mugs and I put it on flasks and just all kind of useful things that people can see art every day being used. And then my second style of art is blue tape. I love to call it blue tape because I don't have another style, but blue painter's tape. I'll put it out where I have the idea, and then I'll use an etching knife and actually cut out on the blue tape what I see, tear out the blue tape paint, and then when I pull all the blue tape off, it's this beautifully etched, like, clean lines. It's different. It's a little bit tedious, but I love the way it looks. And for anybody listening, please go check out the social media and see what I'm talking
about. What inspired you to do that? Because for me, I've never seen it before. So what inspired you to do those kind of pieces?
So I said, I'm not really a traditional artist. I couldn't draw you a stick figure if you wanted me to. But like I said, the music that I was around growing up in New York, the graffiti that was on the walls. I'm very blessed that my parents were cultured and took me to libraries, and I had a passport when I was like 12, 13 years old, and I got to visit other countries and see art and stuff like that. And so having those opportunities coming back to growing up and figuring out how can I merge all of these things that's impacted my life. And for me, it was the magazines. I have a very intimate connection with magazines and wanting to work for a magazine company when I graduated college, and using them to then, even though they're out of print and out of publications, bringing those faces and images of Black people and happiness and joy, putting it back to use in art form. So
it's not lost on me that you got a Basquiat shirt on, though.
Come on, man. Come on. I think fashion is the highest form of art, too. I mean, getting up every day and putting on something that symbolizes you and it's speaking to everyone that sees you is the best.
It's got to be a conversation piece. Nonverbal communication. Yeah. It literally will speak for you before you even enter the room, right? Exactly. Do you know what you're going to do on your piece, or it just kind of comes to you?
I definitely go into my pieces with an idea, and a lot of the bigger pieces I've done. So some of them are really large scale. So I've actually fabricated walls that I've built that I can pop up anywhere, whether it's at schools and fairs and carnivals. And the things that I put on the walls vary based on where I am. I'll sometimes put up vinyl toys. I'll hang up vinyl records, old nostalgic vintage things to expose people to stuff that they may not have known. Introduce them to just a new culture. But I love that every event that I have an opportunity to go to, I can customize the walls and make it my version of whatever I'm in.
Right.
Yeah.
No, walk me through your process of stepping out of your introvertness into public speaking.
That's a good question.
Yeah, man. Took that away from me. Man, I'm gonna let you lead the show today.
Like I said earlier, it was all about trying to find a voice. And if anybody's listening who is still trying to find their voice, I would strongly encourage you to never stop that journey. Like, always, you know, whatever brings you joy, do that until you're able to find the joy within you and share that with others. And I say that to say that I realize that coming from a hip hop world, but I'm not a B-boy, right? So I don't have bars. And fusing that with poetry and spoken word, fusing it with soul and jazz and funk. There's a way of doing that and making it something kind of like storytelling, like what our ancestors would have done when you sat around the fireplace, something like a griot. That's what they would call them back in the day. And I that was more of the lane that I wanted to take, because I went to college and journalism was my first love, but I did African-American studies as my second degree. And just having that, I realized I have a wealth of knowledge when it comes to music. I have a wealth of knowledge when it comes to sneakers and art and records and toys. I can't let that go to waste. I have to tell people about what I'm doing. And what I love about social media is sometimes it does the talking for me. I can just post a picture and put some cool comments and that'll say everything I need to. But getting out in public speaking, man, that was tough for me, because there's nowhere to hide. There's no screen to hide behind.
No savior.
There's no safety net.
Yeah.
And I loved it because it was a new adventure for me. I feel scared even to this moment. We're talking on the mics and I'm a little nervous, but to get up in front of a crowd of, you know, 100, 200 people, at points I was doing two shows a night with a group called Pachakasha. And we were at the Dr. Phillips Performing Arts Center. And I mean, you'd look up and it's people all the way up to the top. And those moments, something else takes over. I don't know how to explain it. It's an outer body experience. The introvert is gone and you kind of lean on what you've learned in Toastmasters and street dialect. What we're doing right now, you kind of lean on those things as I have these skills. I'm just going to go out here and see what I can do. And thank God I haven't failed yet. I've messed up a lot. There'll be a lot of times where I fall flat on my face, but I think that's all a part of growing and learning.
Is there a level of anxiety that comes with that? And how do you push that to the side?
I've learned to do some training, breathing training. Working out has been very important to me recently, getting my body in shape. Breath control, being able to run a lot. It's all these things I'm learning are what makes me not just a better person, but a better communicator. And in terms of anxiety, that'll never go away, bro. I ain't gonna lie, man. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of large crowds, spoken to a lot of young people, and I always feel anxious before I go up. And it's a reminder that what I'm doing is genuine and it's authentic and it's pure. Yes. And what I have to offer is something that these people need to hear. And I just try to lean on that, man.
The reason I ask that is because some people will use that anxiety as a reason not to move forward.
100%.
They'll use that and stop themselves and say, all right, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm too afraid of this. Yeah. Let me not share what I need to share and pull back. But you found a way to push through it.
Greatness is on the other side of that anxiety, man. I realize that. Greatness. Greatness and success and all of those things that we're trying to achieve in life. Once you can get over the fear, man.
I think Will Smith said that. Greatness is on the other side of fear. I mean, he did that when he was skydiving. He was so afraid to skydive. Yeah, he was so afraid to skydive that it wasn't until he jumped that he realized how beautiful it was.
Man, that's amazing.
Talk to me a little bit about the author in you, man.
Words. Words is my first love, man. That was my first love. I remember when I was real little, I would listen to Tribe Called Quest tapes and like try to write the lyrics down, because back then we didn't have the lyrics in the books. So I'd be like, play, listen to a few bars, write them down, stop, rewind, play. And then I'd repeat it, right? So I would be like, Fife, I like them brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. You know what I'm saying? Like, that became what I fell in love with, was the words. And going to college and being able to understand, like, reading books that I had never read before and being exposed to authors I had never heard of, it really just opened my mind to this idea that, hey, man, one day I can write a book. And the minute I graduated, it was one of the first things I did. Did my first book in 2013 called Summer Session. I took a year off. I did the next book, Alumni. I think that was in 2015. And then Sketches of a Blue Note, which, again, are always me pushing the boundary for getting young Black men, women, Black people to read. I felt like it was this stereotype that we didn't want to read, or we were scared to read. And I get it. We're in a digital age now, but there is something about holding those pages and turning them and creating the cover.
Was your writing ability your first outlet of releasing your introvert?
That's the first time I realized I actually had talent. I would write my English papers and submit them. And every paper I got back, they'd be like, this is amazing. Your character development is amazing. The storytelling is amazing. And I was like, wow, it's just what I was seeing in my head that I was putting on the paper. And to answer your question, yes, it was the absolute first time. And it was the way for me to be free and not have anybody look at me and judge me, because I could hide behind the words on the paper.
You talked earlier on about well said, right? And I've had a chance to kind of witness that firsthand and be part of that program.
Thank you for that, bro.
Oh, thank you. Talk to me about the outer body experience for you is one thing, right? But now standing there and seeing, you know, young Black men having a platform to speak, right? Many of them probably introverted, right? And if some of them were extroverted, some of that might have been stifled by, you're too hyperactive, right? We go back to muting. What was that like? Because, you know, one, they got to trust someone who's outside of the household, which they might not even trust most people in the household. So talk to me a little bit about Well Said.
Yeah, so for those listening that aren't aware of what Well Said is, 4 years ago, I partnered with Route 7 Orlando to create a mentorship program that was a little out of the box, fusing my love for words, public speaking, Black culture, music, fusing all of those things together. And I came up with this idea called Well Said, which is a 8-week program that we take young boys in the inner city, young boys and girls. One location is solely young men, and then I have another location where we have a mixed bag.
What are the ages?
Middle to high school.
Okay.
Thank you for that question. Middle to high school. We want to catch them in that age range, because that's when I feel like they're the most vulnerable. That's when they have the most fear. But once in this 8-week program, we're teaching them, how do you look someone in the eyes when you're speaking to make them feel comfortable? How do you find your voice, memorization, little things like that, so that when they, if their public speaking isn't their ambition, at least when they go to do an interview, a job interview, they have tangible skills that they can do, and they'll fit right in. And I think that's something that our young people aren't getting through school, is just those those basic things, money management, people management, those kind of things. And so WellSaid became that hub for us to, it started that way. It started as public speaking, and then it evolved into, now we have young men that we're able to build and grow. We're mentoring them now. We've had them 2-3 years. We're on year 4. We've literally grown up with them our whole lives. Now let's start teaching them about money. Now let's start teaching them about being better human beings, right? How do you get out of this environment and go into another one and thrive? Now we're in that space where we've had these young men for a little while, and now we're pushing them more. And just to do a little plug, we actually, tomorrow, we have our graduation, our showcase, where our young men have finished the 8-week program, and tomorrow they graduate. So I'm really excited for those young men. I can't wait for them. They're going to get up there. They're going to run the show. I'm going to step back, and I'm actually going to, like you said, watch kind of the fruits of the labor that they've put in over those 8 weeks.
How many classes have you graduated? Sorry.
No, you're good. And with that question, I'd love to know, for anyone who's listening, how did they get access for their kids to be able to do something like this? So go ahead.
I love that. First, your question. This is year 4 for us. We actually started the year of the pandemic and had to shut down abruptly, of course. But the next year we started, and we've graduated over 200 kids at this point.
Nice.
We have locations in Winter Park. We have a location in Pine Hills. And then we also have the location in Pine Hills, which is our main one that started it all. And then... Your question again? Sorry, brother.
How do you get access to something? So, you know, as a parent, how do I make sure that...
Yeah, is there a cost that's incurred with all this?
So this is a great question, because I do it through Route 7 for a nonprofit. That gives me the ability to go into some of these inner city schools and do it through that nonprofit. Time Capsule for the Culture, which is my brand. I do WellSaid outside of the nonprofit world. So there is a program that your children can join if you're interested for a cost. It'll be the same format. We'll have the same everything that we're doing with those other kids. It'll just be a little bit more advanced. But yes, to answer your question, there is a way that you can. And I would tell people, just visit my website at akwanzakadugan.com, and you can get more information there.
I was waiting for you to say the last name correctly, yeah, too. I was testing you
spell
also.
It out, spell it out for them.
Yeah,
too.
Spell it out, please.
Spell it out for them.
No
too.
Doubt, man. It's AKUANZACADOGAN.
Awesome. Thank you. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. What's going on, everybody? It's the official Adrian Illwill. You're listening to On The Real Podcast, where we talk real life, real issues, real talk. Everything is from a man's perspective, mental health. But listen, we open it up. We talk about parenting, we talk about relationships, we talk about finance, we talk about Will now setting boundaries and learning how to reset those boundaries. But anyway, we got Akwanza Kadugan.
There it is.
Man. Got to reset the frame.
It is.
All right, there we go. But you know, you talked about WellSaid. You talked about, you know, being an author, being an artist, and one of the things that we really wanted to talk about tonight, and I know you said you can't speak for the entire Black community, but, you know, I would really love to hear from you, especially having worked in a community, whether it's Route 7, My Brother's Keeper, or whatever you've worked on.
Yep.
Have you seen how mental health conditions have been disproportionate in terms of Black individuals and what could probably be some of the contributing factors at all?
I wouldn't really say disproportionate. I would just say that we're just uneducated. We're unaware that it was something that we needed. I think if you ask any Black person, we're just used to dealing with it, which isn't the best thing to do, but we find a way to just get through it. And in doing so, there's a lot of mental scarring that happens. And now that we're becoming a little bit more educated about options that are available, people are actually feeling comfortable to speak out about issues happening in their homes. I mean, if we finances, all the core things that human beings deal with, right? Family, money, love. I think all of those things are things that we could all use a little mental health help from now. And again, if you ask me, to be honest, in the community right now, I think we talked about this. I talked about it a little bit earlier with gun violence being the way it is now, rules and laws changing slightly, being desensitized to violence on television and social media. I feel we're all struggling a lot more with mental health than we need to be. It's being put right in front of our faces. But I will say, strides are being made. I can honestly say I'm on the front lines, and I see mental health advocates such as yourself. I know you've bought a large part of that to Route 7. I see people speaking up and letting us know it's okay to do it. And I see our community changing because we are doing that, because we are speaking up and we are talking to someone. You're starting to see a lot more young people being open about mental health, talking about it openly. I have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old, and I check with them every day. Like, listen, everything all right? Talk to me. I mean, if you don't want to talk to me, talk to someone. I'll take you to talk to someone. So being aware of it and trying to introduce my children to it at a younger age, and actually all children, would be amazing, just letting them know.
But a lot of that begins in the home.
Yeah, it does.
If the parents aren't active, or, you know, when the child tries to express himself, if they get shut down and told to stop being a little man,
yeah,
you know, it makes it a little more difficult for the child to open up the next time.
And let's face it, I mean, mental health and going to see a counselor or therapy costs money. It's not cheap. Thankfully, we have organizations that'll, you know, give you a sounding board for moments like that. But if you want real one-on-one attention, as you should receive it in a room with that noise going on outside, you know, so that people don't hear you, that's going to cost you. And to be honest, we're at a time where dollars and cents are really tight for everyone. And if people are choosing between a meal or going to see a therapist, you know, we know what's getting removed from that list quickly, which isn't always the best. Although there's success being made, it's kind of two steps forward, three steps back.
You said that, and I was just recently interviewed for a local magazine, and that was one of the questions that came up. And it was funny that I didn't immediately have an answer, because I had to think about my own experience in terms of, I've been very fortunate, right? I've had the opportunity to work for an organization with a great EAP,
yep,
where I could go test out a therapist for three sessions, mm-hmm, decide whether or not I wanted to continue to see them. And then through, you know, an FSA, right, a flexible spending account, I could use those dollars, right? Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about what you would recommend for someone who maybe doesn't have that kind of access or doesn't have the finances. What would you recommend as a good outlet?
I would say, it's funny because organizations like Route 7 Orlando, I hate to kind of plug that again, but
no, continue to do it.
It's a safety net it's testing it out without having to spend the money. None of us are licensed therapists at the organization. However, we are listening ears, and we all have different experiences. We have gentlemen that are in their 40s, 50s, and we have guys as young as 23, 26. So there's a large range of experiences that happen in that room. And just speaking up at one of our accountability meetings is almost like a therapy session. I mean, I know you guys have had the opportunity to attend one. Those accountability meetings are almost like a therapy session for all of us. It's just for us to get off what's on our chest. And whoever is listening that is going through something similar, your build of connection, and hopefully you exchange numbers and you talk later, and just the things that we should be doing anyway as men to expand our horizons and build bridges and help ourselves mentally. I think the more bridges we form, the better we are, because we have people to lean on when times get rough.
Yeah, I love that. I went to the accountability meeting, and mm-hmm, I respected that every issue or problem that was thrown out, it was spun back around to the person. All right, what are you doing about it? Yeah. It wasn't let go as, all right, we're just going to focus on the issue. We're going to focus how you're handling the issue.
Yeah. And we follow that up by, how can we help you as well?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's equally as important as someone that's going to hold you accountable to, you know, you having an issue. Like, listen, did you go see that therapist you talked about, or do you need help? Maybe we could put together some money and get you a couple therapy sessions, you know, like those are the kind of support systems that would really help. I mentioned that the earlier Pernell Bush, he has his movement called No Limit Counseling, which we've been pushing a lot of people of color to his business because he is of our age group, similar to us. And I feel like it's a little bit more comfortable to talk to someone at our own level rather than someone that's a little bit senior or even someone a little bit younger. You're almost like, I don't feel comfortable telling someone so
young. What have you gone through that you can tell me something? You know what I'm saying?
True. I mean, yeah. You know, but again, it's that stereotype, right? How could someone younger give any perspective, but you got to remove yourself from the situation and go, wait, hold on. I don't know what they've been through.
Yeah.
Let me take a step back. Let me shut my mouth and let me actually listen. Cause I think if there's any opportunity to learn from someone, regardless of age, take that opportunity. Yeah. Right. And 100%. There's so much there. Do you feel, you know, you said, and I'm loving hearing this, that there's this approach or there's this openness to being a little bit more vulnerable and acceptance of mental health from what you're finding. I do have to ask, though, do you feel like some of the barriers are finally being lifted or are still some barriers out there in terms of that access? And I'm not even talking finances, yeah. Right? Do you feel like there's still some of those barriers out there?
Oh, there'll always be barriers. There'll always be barriers. But like I was mentioning, we're overcoming that by putting mental health people in the schools and putting them in the community centers and in the Boys and Girls Clubs. I think we find a problem and then we figure out a way to cheat the problem, right? Like, I think that's human nature. Like, we want to figure out how we get access, even if we're going to be denied it. And so we've identified that mental health is an issue. We know where the solutions are, right? We need to get to therapy. We need to talk to people. We need to be open and vulnerable. Now we're at a stage where we're figuring out, how do we get that to the people? How do we, whether that's bringing them to us, we're pushing people to them. We're figuring out how we get around the finances with, you know, benefits and stuff like that. So I think if we're looking for any kind of hiccups, that's where it would be. Any kind of aid that people would provide people of color to go get the therapy kind of on a trial basis. If we're looking for areas for improvement, I think that would be one major one, is how do we find money? Because there's a ton of money for people with all kind of conditions. We just need to figure out how to get the hands to the people that need it for therapy.
What's the ideal success of Route 7 Orlando look like? Because, you know, I came into it and I saw this group of men and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And it's hard for me not to big picture anything.
Sure.
Right. So I sit there and I'm like, man, I see this one day being a big conference hall, an organization that's spread out throughout the country. But that's my perspective. Yeah. Talk to me about what success for the organization, or if you guys already kind of established what that looks like.
Yeah. I can't speak on it for the whole organization. I know me personally, I believe that we're doing this. Our approach to what we're doing is what I really love. And it's this grassroots effort of being in the community, right? I think a lot of people are comfortable on the screens, on the phone, handling business that way. But to actually be face to face with issues and problems and seeing the young people that we affect and touching, I mean, there's gardens in Paramore that we've kind of helped, you know, do some cultivating and getting that ready for the community. We're actually doing things that are going to help the community. And I feel like with that kind of organic growth, sky's the limit, because the young people that are in Well Said Now will hopefully grow up and want to join Route 7.
There you go.
And now we have a second and third generation of young people that are going to kind of keep it going once us older folks are gone. So global, I would love that. National, I would love that. But for right now, we want to make our city the best city we can. We want to make our communities the best communities they can be. And we want to make the young people the best that they could be as well.
What kind of support have you seen from the city of Orlando so far with Route 7 and what you've done?
That's a great question, man. I mean,
is there any?
No, there is.
So there is. Yeah. That's a great question.
Why I ask these questions. Well, what are you doing? this is the show.
The way he got stuck, I was like, he's trying not to throw somebody under the bus.
There is no shade I'm trying to throw here.
There's kind of always two sides to a coin, and I will say this: nonprofit world is very new to me. That's not my world. I've only known you make a craft, you sell it, you make money. In the nonprofit world, it really boils down to who has the best grant writer. And I'm just going to keep it a buck with y'all. Like, that's really what it boils down to. You pay someone that can write really great grants or write really good grant letters. You submit all those grants, the money comes back. That really doesn't work for some small independent black and brown organizations who are really now kind of getting off the ground. They have all the soldier power they need, but we just can't afford that grant writer who's going to get us a ton of money. Now, I will say we were able to receive some grant funding a year ago from the mayor of Orlando, and we got a lot of money, and we were able to really show out for our boys. But again, we backed off the grant writing, and so the next year, you know, if you try to do it yourself, you change a couple letters, it might not sound the same. And so funding is something that's a constant battle of, like, how do we get this money? How do we write the best grant proposal so we get the money from the city? And there's nonprofit organizations that have been doing this for years that just kind of rinse and repeat. But I think for us, with the grassroots effort and starting new, we got a lot to learn, and we're growing in that area. Send us some money, y'all.
Yeah. I was waiting for something.
Route7Orlando.org. Send us some money.
You there know. You go. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Plug that again.
Yeah. Route7Orlando.org. That is the best way to find out information, not only about the organization, but we have a lot of really cool, awesome events coming up. One being our annual Day of Giving, which is what we do every year for Thanksgiving for the folks in the Paramore community.
What day
we
is
actually
that?
Feed. I knew you was gonna ask me.
Come on now,
put it down, bitch. Yep. We are doing that on November, which I didn't write the date down. But go to Route7Orlando.org, and you're gonna find that date. But we are looking to feed 100 families meals. It'll be at 6 p.m. at the Grand Avenue neighborhood. So please visit the website.
Sure. What else you got coming up?
Like I mentioned, we've got the Well Said Showcase tomorrow evening. Anybody in the area of Paramore, stop by the Levy Hughes Boys and Girls Club. We'll be in the gymnasium. Those boys are going to put on a really good show, man. They've helped me build the backdrop. We've been practicing them getting up on the mic and feeling comfortable speaking to large crowds. So I'm really excited to see what they get done.
Dope, man. Dope.
And then I think future tense for me, looking into 2024, I usually like to let the ink dry on projects, but I'm really looking forward to some of the work I'll be doing in Pine Hills. My good brother Seven and an organization called Las Emilias out there, they're doing some really great work. I'm looking to help kind of shape some of that stuff in Pine Hills in 2024, so stay tuned.
Nice. Any new books in the future?
I've been sitting on a new book for a while, man. Absolute Zero. It was my first try at sci-fi, and life got in the way. I hate to use that as an excuse, but when you're out here trying to change people's lives, it's kind of hard to sit down and scribe some chapters. But stay tuned. I do want to get into that. I mean, that's my first love. So books.
So give them the titles of your first three again, so that we can go out and get them.
Of course, Summer Session, man. All of these are available on Amazon right now. So if you just Google my name on Amazon, which is Akwanza Cadogan. AKUANZACADOGAN. The first book is Summer Session, Alumni, and then Sketches of a Blue Note. So
I'm gonna give this as an open mic for you right now, whether you want to plug anything else, if there's any questions or anything you want to talk about. I'm turning the mic over to you for a second. If you don't have it, it's okay. We're gonna go with our outro, but I just want to give you the mic for a second, man.
Yeah, listen, real quick, peace and love. I promised my daughter, who always is tapped into everything that I do, she's like a little diva, but I promised I'd show her some love. So Kendall baby, if you're listening, love my son Smush. That's the reason why I do a lot of the things I do. And I think anybody listening, you really have to find what drives and motivates you. And once you find that, do it for humanity, man. Do it to leave the world a little bit better than you found it. That's kind of been my motto, and that's kind of what pushes me and drives me in life. So stay true to who you are. Find who you are. Love who you are. More love, more positivity, more unity. Thank you guys for having me, man. This is beautiful.
Man, honestly, it's the best opener that we could have for someone on the show. Honestly, at the end of the day, you know, our goal here is to make sure that we give someone a platform, they can speak. Obviously, everything is left from a mental health perspective, but whatever it takes to get your message out there, you know, what you're doing in the community, what you're trying to do, even if you heard him tonight and you're like, man, I just need that extra little bit. Reach out to him. Reach out to us. We'll get you on here. We'll talk about that. We'll get that out there. Man, what a great show, Will, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Thank you for pulling up, man.
You know, that's the best thing. Listen, that's probably my third listen for tonight. Just going to go ahead and call it out. I'm going to do it on every show. I'm going to get a shirt.
We really need to put a listen jaw here.
There you go.
Every time you say it, put a dollar
in. I'm just going to have a shirt that says listen. And then on the back, on the real
Linda.
Podcast. There you go.
Listen, Linda. Linda, listen.
I came with you. See, and this is what happens, right? I don't know my lead-in word because I took my lead-in word away. But more than anything, if you're going through something, right? Whether you're dealing with anxiety, depression, bipolar, any of it, there's a great resource out there. It's 988. You can text, you can call. It's completely anonymous, right? You know, get what's on your mind out there. If you're going through something so deep as suicidal ideation, take it from me. I'm a two-time Baker Act survivor. I wish I would have used this resource. However, I am here today to share it with you. We know that's not always an easy outlet, right? Sometimes it's hard to do those things. So, Will, please send us off. What can they do if they want to go a different route?
Talk to a friend, a family member you trust. Listen, we're giving you outlets. Reach out to Aquanza, contact Route 7 Orlando. There's plenty of things that people out here willing to listen and coach you through it and talk you through it. We have ears. We're willing to listen. We have open hearts. Don't feel you're alone in this. Everyone's going through something, and we just need to push through together.
Yeah, friends, family, colleagues, see a professional. Highly recommended, something that can help you. We're so glad you listened in tonight.
Yeah.
Can't wait to bring you episode 5.
Yeah.
6, 7 through 1,000. But thank you so much for listening in tonight. Will, thank you, man. I appreciate it. Much
Adrian,
love.
As always.
Thank you. All right. We'll check you on the next one.